This is the first episode I am posting since flattening the curve of the spread of COVID-19 through social distancing, stay-at-home orders, and other practices for staying safe have become fairly ubiquitous across the country. Gatherings are limited to less than 10 or none at all. Every day we are hearing about how funerals are being canceled or that funeral homes are only offering direct burials or cremations, meaning that in some circumstances, not even one family member can come to the funeral home or attend a burial at a cemetery. It's obviously super important that we all do our part to make sure we are engaging in best safety practices in our communities to keep ourselves and others safe. In the midst of this crisis, the funeral industry is reasserting control over funeral practices that greatly restrict family participation and influence in after-death care. People in positions of authority are quickly coming up with guidelines, some of which are entirely reasonable and rational. But what are the implications of decisions that aren't well thought out? And what will be the emotional cost to those of us grieving when we are not permitted to participate in saying farewell to our loved ones in the way that we had expected? Today I'm having what I hope will be the first conversation around the changes to funeral practice during the pandemic. Joining me on this episode are Danny Lavore in Arizona, president of the National Home Funeral Alliance, and Elizabeth Fournier, a licensed funeral director in Oregon, specializing in home funeral support and natural burial. During our discussion about restrictions some cemeteries have enacted during these unsettling times, I describe a burial I recently helped facilitate at Heartland Prairie Cemetery, the natural burial ground my husband and I started here in Kansas. It's important to note that our policy requires that the family of the deceased lower the body into the grave, and we invite them to close the grave themselves. We provide the instruction and all the tools needed to do so, including ropes and shovels. It's a very engaged, hands-on experience. Unlike conventional cemeteries, we do not have a group of staff who are working at the cemetery and risking exposure when a small family group gathers. It is troubling to me, however, that some of the decision-making around funerals and burials are fairly irrational, as you will hear Elizabeth describe in our conversation. There is also some fear around whether people can be infected by a person who died from COVID or had been cared for by someone with COVID. We touch on this in our conversation, but I want to add here what the Center for Disease Control has to say regarding this question. According to the CDC, there is currently no known risk associated with being in the same room at a funeral or visitation service with the body of someone who died of COVID-19. Precautions need to be taken to not get the virus from the living, breathing people around us. The risk of getting COVID-19 from a deceased person is extremely unlikely. I'll be linking a very informative letter on this subject from Josh Slocum, the president of the Funeral Consumers Alliance, in the show notes. And now on to today's episode of A Path Home. Thank you, both of you, for joining me today. COVID-19 has made its way into every state in the U.S., and the responses are changing rapidly. I'd like to start with you, Elizabeth. Maybe you could just start by telling us about what your experience has been in Oregon.
What I find is it's really opening up the conversation, having us understand how ill-equipped and how poorly prepared we are to deal with death and dying. This has really come at such a fast clip and such an amazingly alarming rate. What I'm finding with Oregon is there's a general overwhelm of sadness that grieving and taking care of people is not what it used to be. The big fear picture I'm getting from people who are calling the funeral home and wanting to stop by is, wait a minute, how am I going to have a funeral? How are we going to take our person into church? Or how many people can come to the cemetery? And there's just the pandemic response of, we're losing people. And people are not able to go through the usual channels of grief. People can't bring a casserole to the home. and people can't hug you and kiss you and do all those things that we really need. And I'm sure a lot of states are really handling it and feeling of it the same way. I'm out here in Oregon. We're very rural. I happen to be in a little town called Boring, which is extremely small, but I'm only 20 miles from downtown Portland. So I'm still well aware of the whole concept of what's happening here in Oregon. Most funeral homes are not allowing anybody to come into the doors. Everything needs to be electronic. But out here in the country, I find not everybody has access to email or a fax machine. And I have a lot of small town people who really want to do handshake business. They want to come in and they want to see who's dealing with their loved one. So that's just the standard funeral business things. I also have the whole aspect of the home burial and the home funeral, which, of course, you know, is a little bit different because people can do that underneath their own guise.
Exactly. Yeah, it's very different. You know, so much of what we're hearing are guidelines for funeral directors, for cemeteries, and there's not a lot of information out there for home funeral families or people who are caring for a loved one who's dying at home, not from COVID-19 necessarily. So, Danny, I know the National Home Funeral Alliance has a whole page of resources up right now. And I wonder if we could go through what is available on the website.
Sure. So, you know, we've been thinking a lot about the fact that while a lot of the guidelines that are coming out are really about, you know, funeral directors and what's safe for them, making sure that families know, you know, that they can still care for their own loved ones using, you know, just proper precautions. And also just thinking a lot about the fact that families are potentially going to end up having a home funeral that maybe didn't plan to have a home funeral and never even really heard that was a good idea. And so making sure that our website has a lot of information for people who find themselves in that situation who maybe didn't know that that was a possibility. So we've shared the amazing resource list from the Oregon Funeral Resource and Education, which is just full of information. We have a webinar put together by a bunch of amazing NHFA affiliates about how home funeral guides can still support families. We have videos about how to create beautiful rituals and still have meaningful funerals at a time when there's limits on what people can do. Some information about how to best support people with who are grieving, and then also just general resources from the Centers for Disease Control, information from the Green Burial Council and things like that. So our website's really full right now of things that people can do, hopefully if they're you know, either members of the NHFA already who are trying to educate in their community about what's possible. And also, you know, we have a lot of families that end up stumbling upon our website when they're just Googling to figure out what the heck is going on. And hopefully they'll find some help there.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And I know that we're going to keep adding to that as resources become more available.
There are so many things people are coming up with. The idea of hugging clothing, which belongs to that individual. The idea of going to the window and talking to them through the window and drawing pictures. We have, of course, everything through the internet and through the telephone, but all deciding at a specific time you're going to play a certain song or you're going to light a candle or all these things that we can really do to get together. Children can be involved in these things, and even somebody who's not overly mobile can be involved. And so it's really sort of a nice time to slow down and realize what is important and figure out ways to make that happen.
Mm-hmm. I know there's a lot of fear around whether the deceased can transmit COVID to the care providers at home.
So what we have is the Oregon Health Authority is keeping in touch with the funeral homes and the licensed providers here in the state. And they're letting us know that there are some procedures to take with bodies. And that would be, of course, to use your plastics, use your gloves, use your protective masks. Just be careful. It's sort of like, it reminds me of what we did with AIDS in the 90s. That sort of fear of the unknown of what if I touch this person's skin or what if I push on their chest cavity and they breathe on me, all these things that we don't quite know about. So we're taking care of those things. If we know somebody is positive or maybe wasn't tested but possibly is, then there's precautions we're using of putting some Liberol, which is kind of a thicker cotton that we can put up somebody's nasal cavity areas, cover the mouth, basically make sure those orifices aren't getting any droplets or moisture onto us as we're handling them. But we're also hearing the chance of catching it from deceased individuals isn't as great as I think some of us are fearing. It really depends on the scenario. But nonetheless, we have a different color bag that's used at the crematory, and gloves and things are normally precautions that are used just to be safe. You know, I'm the kind of funeral director, when I go into a home, I don't use gloves. I don't use a plastic bag. You know, it's very, your loved one is your loved one, and they're laying there and they're just beautiful, and we can move them. And even if something is soiled, they're human. It doesn't matter. That's still grandma. That's still mama. So it's a little bit different in this case, but again, being safe is a smart way to do it. And I guess we'll just see as this unfolds, are we taking enough precautions? Are we being overly precautious? We don't know. We're all in this together and we're all just trying to figure it out.
Right. And I've been emailing a little bit with Amy Cunningham, who is a funeral director in New York City. And she shared with me that the funeral homes are treating every death as if it's a COVID-19 death. So using body bags, even for a simple funeral, putting the deceased in a body bag in the pine box. So yeah, you know, I don't know. Maybe that is a bit of an overreaction. And then again, like you're saying, we're just figuring it out as we go along and trying to be extremely cautious. That said, I feel like what you were saying, Danny, is really important about families caring for their own and knowing that so many of these guidelines are directed at a professional industry and also directed at, the level of what's going on in New York is extreme. And we haven't had that experience in our rural counties across the country. So we're just not seeing what some of these larger cities are experiencing yet.
I feel like here what I'm seeing more and what's troubling me and in my community care group is the reality that, you know, non-COVID deaths are more prevalent than COVID deaths.
Exactly.
And that it's that sense that, you know, life is going on, right? Kids are still having birthday parties. We had a drive-by birthday party the other day for a friend's son, and the little boy sat out in his front yard, and we all drove by and sang songs. And so it's like those birthdays are continuing to happen, and so are the deaths. You know, I know of some people who have had some really major tragedies. You know, their 20-year-old son died in a car accident. All of these things are still happening that aren't COVID related, but that our community doesn't know how to come together right now as life and death continue to go on. And so, you know, as somebody who, you know, has been doing community education, a lot of my questions really lie in like, how do we continue to support healthy grief, COVID related or not, you know, during this time when people are so separated. It's really a puzzle to me to watch life kind of keep spinning.
In fact, I had a burial out at my cemetery yesterday, and it really was the first burial that we've had since all the social distancing norms, you know, came into place. And there were probably 7 people that gathered around the grave site and did everything. They had wrapped him in a shroud. He had died in hospice from cancer. And the hospice care team was really supportive. And there was a nurse there that helped with ritually bathing the body, preparing the body for the shroud that the family had made. They brought him out to the cemetery. And it was really interesting for me to just stand back and give them the support and the instruction that they needed to move his body onto the burial board and to create their own ritual around the grave that we had already prepared. And then they lowered him into the ground. They covered the grave themselves. And when I left, they were all just hanging out, sort of social distanced enough from each other and sharing a bottle of wine. And I know that's not possible in some places. I'm fortunate that I can still provide, you know, this wide open space where people can come and collectively lay their loved ones to rest.
Yeah, that's gorgeous. And I can tell you a scenario that I'm having today, which is going to be completely opposite from that. I have a little lady who's lived her life nice and quiet, and her husband of many, many, many years wants to, of course, be there. And the cemetery says, nope, no family whatsoever. So the elderly gentleman said, well, what if I just come with my son and my pastor, and it's just three of us, and we stand at a distance? And I said, they won't allow that. And then he says, well, okay, what if it's just myself and my pastor? Well, what if I just come? And people can't understand how is a cemetery saying, no, you are not welcome to be there when your person is laid into the earth. It makes no sense to people. So he was thinking, I said, you can be in. I said, I'll tell you what, this is what we can do. The cemetery doesn't want me to tell you the time we're doing this because where we are in Oregon is sort of the immediate burial, the direct cremation at this point. And I said, if I tell you the time, you can arrive, but they'll need you to stay in your car. So you still can be present, you still can be on the grounds. And he said, that would just be too hard. I would need to be on the grass, I would need to be at the grave, I would need to be there. And how tragic. But that cemetery has its rules, and we have to follow the rules. They're trying to protect their workers. I posted something on my Instagram yesterday about how now the burials that I'm taking care of here locally, the cemeteries say no family whatsoever. It's immediate. Only the funeral home worker is allowed to come to drop the loved one off. And I wrote about how that breaks my heart and how sad that is. And everybody really said, yes, that's horrible. And there was one man who was very vocal who said, that's a bunch of crap. This is really up to the family. And yes, I agree immensely. It would be wonderful if the family decided they were going to come and they were going to have a small group and they were going to spread out and be safe. I would think if they took protective cautions and measures, my best thinking says everybody would be protected and then they would also be getting what they need to get to have at least the closure in a very non-normal or traditional way, but maybe something they would get. But to have it completely taken away, it's just heartbreaking. But I have to follow the rules.
Now, this seems to me like an overreaction, like an overresponse on the part of the cemetery, right? Like, really, we're outside. I mean, yesterday, I wore a mask, and there were, I want to say, two or three of the family members, I guess three of the family members that were also wearing masks during this time. But everybody was being very cautious. I mean, of course, they had to get a little close together in order to lower the body into the grave. But these are also family members who have been pretty much staying together throughout the care of the dying and got together for the burial at the cemetery. So, like, why couldn't this elderly gentleman just stand there 6 feet away from the workers and take those
I hate
precautions?
putting boundaries up to people. Having to explain that to the family felt just pathetic, because I understand they're trying to protect the workers at the cemetery. But
Sure.
again, this family is so willing to have one person and one clergy ride separately in cars and stand 10 feet away from each other. They were really trying the best they could to make this reasonable what's at all. So
But the cemetery was just not willing to budge.
there's a cemetery in Washington State here who allows nobody in, and there was a congregation who had to line up on the side. They weren't allowing anyone in. The funeral home had to open up the van and allow them to see their loved one in a parking lot. And that family said, we felt dirty, like we were committing a crime or doing something wrong by viewing our loved one in a van in some random parking lot because the cemetery said, all of you, just get out.
Yeah, that's really intense. I mean, I can, it kind of makes sense to me in a closed in space, like not having a visitation inside a funeral home, but when you're outdoors, and yeah, that's very troubling.
Well, and to me, what it brings up is, this we talk a lot in normal times about the importance of establishing strong relationships with funeral homes and cemeteries and hospitals and whatnot, and making sure that the policies are in place for families to exercise their rights to, have meaningful end of life moments, whether it's a funeral or a home funeral. And so this is one of those moments where it's echoing really loud for me that if we don't have cemeteries locally, like yours, Sarah, that are really willing to work with families, then in times like this, people are really sunk. And I think we'll see, you know, some reverberations of, you know, that lost ability to really grieve in a satisfying way in the months and years to come, as, you know, as this thing passes and people haven't been able to do those things. Yeah, it just speaks to how we need to be doing our advocacy work where we live and make sure that we have strong relationships and that those death workers really know and get how important it is when families get those times with their loved ones.
We also have the fear picture of businesses feeling that they're going to get fined. And that's what a lot of us are on, more of a shelter in place state, where I am and California is and Washington. We really feel like we've been told we drive in our cars and get pulled over occasionally, and they ask where you're going. And if you don't have a letter from your employer to show that you're an essential worker, you get a ticket. So in this case, I drive a black van with two gurneys in the back. Plus, I think a lot of people know me, so I'm okay. But there's that really odd feeling. What I've been able to do here in my small parlor is, if somebody has passed away, I still allow a visitation. We don't embalm, so nothing invasive at all, but we do allow. For instance, I had a spouse come in this weekend and spent several hours, and I said, okay, just, you know, you, and if you need somebody else to come, then let's stagger the time. And I'll be in my office and you have the freedom of the place and do what you need to do. And that's happened again yesterday as well. I'm not going to deny the immediate family from saying goodbye to their person. It just seems terrible. So, and I figure, okay, but I also don't want to get my state up in arms as well. So I think having one person come in and love their person in a separate room than myself, I just don't see the harm in that.
And I wonder, what is the relationship then at this time to, like, if a family said, oh, well, if we can't have, you know, our immediate family gathering at your parlor, then we'd like to bring the body home and do this at home. What's, you know, I know Oregon's a pretty good state when it comes to home funerals and things like that. Does that feel still possible? Like, if a family came and said that, is that happening? Or could that happen?
Yeah. And so fortunately, I'm one of the funeral homes who embraces that and supports that. So they're not going to get a no from me. They're going to get absolutely, yes, let's make this happen. I find that I offer that to more families than they're actually willing to take me up on that. We give them that as something that you can do. And of course, there's always that shock picture of, that's legal, we can do that. So there's always the education piece that goes into it of saying, absolutely, you don't even need to hire me. You can do all of this yourself. And again, it's kind of, unfortunately, the education is coming at the time of death, when of course you both know the education should be coming way before. And that's why most of us in this movement do public speaking and we write articles. And here we are with this podcast, is to educate people so they know you have all these rights and maybe figure this out prior to the time. But yes, Danny, we do have people who do decide they're going to take that step and do this at home. There's still the guidelines of having all the neighbors over, having all the relatives over, because if you open the door, everybody wants to come, but we also don't want the immediate family now to possibly get ill and then have to deal. So there's lots of real life conversations that happen with, how are we going to do this that actually works for you, but saves everybody else from not having to have any pain themselves.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, family members are also having to be separated from each other. So in certain circumstances, there might be a family member with the help of caregivers that are coming into the home. And then when that person dies, other family members are isolated and can't actually travel. You know, if they're not right there in the immediate area, they can't be there for the after-death care or for the funeral. And that's something that is just a fact during these times, that we're separated from each other and it's not easy. Some of the examples that you were giving earlier, Elizabeth, about creative ways of virtually being together are inherent in how we're having to cope during these times.
when I saw the original pictures in Italy when people were singing from the balconies and then different opera singers were giving performances, I thought, these neighbors probably don't even know each other. And how wonderful that once we get through this, they're going to now be a community. So that's a fantastic thing. We're clapping for the healthcare workers. And why can't we shout out the name of the loved one who passed away? Why can't we all decide we're going to bang our pots and pans or play their favorite music at a certain hour, nice and loud, and do something respectful for others, but also just in community know that all of the Facebook pals for this individual are having their own celebration at this time in the same sort of way. It's pretty powerful.
The thing that I keep coming back to, I think, in all of the conversations that I'm having around this time is like, what can people who are trying to do that education or have been trying to do that education advocacy work about home funerals? You know, I mean, I had a number of talks and classes canceled due to the, you know, to the outbreak. And so it's this interesting sensation of this work that's needed so desperately right now for people to know about home funerals, because it really is the way to still have, or one way to still have a really meaningful experience. And my avenue for educating people about that has been cut off. So that's the question that I keep wanting to ask people, is just like, what's the advice for the home funeral educators right now? Like, what, how do we keep making a difference in our community? You know, there's all these national things that are happening, all these wonderful videos and whatnot. But I think that this work happens really importantly in the circle of a community. And how do we keep educating our communities when we're in isolation?
That's a fantastic question. On the broader spectrum, I am thrilled of all the mass media who's picked up the fact people can't have funerals. There has been major publications writing about this, and that's been really wonderful that they get that this is really in the zeitgeist right now. This isn't this sort of random topic. This is real life, people. And so it's nice that's been out there. I think another way is all of us on our websites can place this information, but also do it where the headers, when people search the internet, COVID-19 funeral in whatever county, different things come up in the search engine when people look, because I think that's what people are looking for. That's how they know how to find. That's what we always say. Well, great, but if someone doesn't know the questions to ask, or they don't know the information to find, how are they going to find it? And so helping them by putting it in the search engine. For a lot of us on Instagram, posting something, and then in the information you can write. Social media is a fantastic way. And also getting together, I know libraries aren't really open, but libraries also have informational pages, and without the community forums that we're used to having, I think this, like Sarah says, podcasting is a fabulous thing to do while you're in quarantine. I mean, this is something that still can be done. So
right.
Getting the word out now, maybe asking people on the home funeral page where people are having the conversation and the group discussion, maybe putting together and encouraging everybody on that to go into their own personal Facebook pages and post, repost, and just so everybody sees that this is information that's out there. And we are, as a nation, we're not even at the crest of the wave yet, as far as what's going to be happening here.
Yeah. And, you know, using a Zoom room like this and calling local meetings on Zoom, informational meetings, is something that we can all do at this time. Reaching out to your circle or people who have come to your death cafe, saying we're actually going to have an informational meeting on death care during Corona right here in our neck of the woods, you know?
Those are all great ideas. And I hope that people don't get discouraged, you know, and really keep, there was a real fire getting stoked right before all this happened in the NHFA membership to really keep going and bring it to a new level, our advocacy and education work. And so I'm hoping that we can find great ways to continue to stoke those flames, because there's some really great people out there who care a lot about this topic, and their creativity is going to make a big difference right now.
Yes, the green burials and the home funerals and people providing their own transportation and learning to make caskets and shrouds. This was really not just something people would talk about. People were actually starting to do it. And this was something that death cafes were becoming readily available, even in real conservative libraries. And we were really ramping up, so to speak. So yeah, you're right. We don't want to lose that momentum now because talks and libraries and conferences and all these things are put on the back burner. Community radio is in a lot of communities, and community radio is open for everything. And they want to hear these voices in the alternative world that's saying, hey, we're here and this is what we can do to help. It's really newsworthy.
I'm hoping that we will have more of these conversations on the podcast and bring in other voices from around the country and just continue to unpack these questions and ponder the answers. And I really appreciate what both of you have had to offer today.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Sarah.
A Path Home is a production of the National Home Funeral Alliance, a nonprofit organization dedicated to educating and advocating for families who choose to care for their own loved ones after death. Visit our website at homefuneralalliance.org. If you like this podcast, please tell a friend and be sure to subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts. The music at the beginning and end of A Path Home was written and performed by Sarah Cruz. Our cover art is designed by Linda Curray, production assistance by Tim Howell. And until next time, remember the words of Ram Dass. We are all walking each other home. I want to be there to walk you home. I'll tend to your body, you'll tend to my soul. And if it happens, the next breath.